Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Welcome. Hello, this is Donna Sebo. I'm delighted that you're able to join me this morning. We have got a very unique guest today. In fact, due to the magic of technology, we are traveling to the Aleutian Islands up in the far north. My guest today is Cora Holmes, and she has written a beautiful novel called The Time of the Otter, and the cover on this is absolutely gorgeous. It shows the Alaskan mountain range and this old ship that is resting quietly in a body of water, and this absolutely beautiful otter is looking you straight in the eye when you pick up this book, and the subtitle is A Time of Justice and A Time of Love. Cora Holmes, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, it is good morning. It's 8 o'clock in the morning for you up in the Aleutian Islands. Cora, you're a woman that really has connected with the Aleutian Islands. You have written 5 other books about the Aleutians, actually 3 of them have been nonfiction, and this is your second novel, which I think is just incredible. But how in the world did you ever end up in the Aleutian Islands?
I answered a newspaper ad.
And what was that ad for?
It was to work on a ranch in the Aleutian Islands called Chernovsky Sheep Ranch. And I went out there about 30 years ago. And after a couple years, I married the owner of the ranch, and we've just lived here ever since.
Now, I have to tell those that are listening, and of course they know that. My listeners know that I travel to Alaska, and I've had a strong bond with it for a number of years. But I had no idea. I cannot recall having a conversation with anyone that I've met in Alaska about sheep ranching in the Aleutian Islands. How in the world did that ever happen? And if I recall correctly, the last time I chatted with you, you said these sheep were just allowed to roam, that they were a particular species of sheep, and that they thrived in this rugged environment. The Aleutians are a tough, tough place to survive.
You're right. The Aleutians is a tough, hostile place to survive. But in about 1915, a Scotsman saw the green hills from a freighter, and he thought, wow, this looks like sheep country. He had worked in the Falklands, which is about same distance from the equator southerly as we are northerly, and he just thought that sheep would do well here. And he was so excited about it and in love with the idea that he interested investors. And in 1923, 2 different companies put 1,000 sheep in Chernovsky Harbor. And that was the real start of sheep ranching in the Aleutians.
Now, is the sheep ranching still going on, or has it discontinued?
Mostly, there are no sheep ranches in the Aleutians anymore. Times have changed. Markets have changed. Synthetics changed the market for that transportable commodity, wool. something that could be stored and kept and transported long distances. So that was a good market for the Aleutians. But when Australian wool came in and people just started wearing different kind of clothes, mm-hmm. the market for wool has very much diminished.
I can see where that would have happened. So here you are. You're in the Aleutian Islands, and you start to write about the Aleutians. In your many years of having lived there, now, the Aleutians are not heavily populated. And, of course, you have very, very long winters, so there is a lot of opportunity for writing. What made you decide to do the research on the Aleutians, number one? And number two, what motivated you to start writing books?
Actually, the first thing I started doing was sending out photographs because it's such a beautiful place, and my husband took such nice photographs. I started sending his photos out with captions and got a little bit of interest and started writing for Country Magazine back in when it started up in the 1989. And that was really how I started writing for Alaska Magazine too. It's just such a unique place. You know, you're kind of torn between wanting to keep it a secret and wanting to share it with everybody because it was just that kind of place. In 1982, National Geographic came out and did a feature on the Aleutians, a big mm-hmm. article, and it just sort of got me interested maybe in sharing some of that splendor.
Well, your book, Time of the Otter, covers more than one time frame. And what really intrigued me, because I don't review many novels, but I like historical novels, and I enjoy novels that have information in them that I know is real information. And yours is loaded with it. You bring out facts about the culture of the people. And I would like to know where you got your concept for Time of the Otter, because it really is a beautiful love story, but it's more than that. It talks about the culture of the native people as well. What is the tribe of people that inhabited the areas of the Aleutians that you yourself occupy?
The tribe that lives on this island is called Kulangwin, and they go by the Unalaska Corporation, and all down the chain they have different tribes and even different languages that are not even understandable to each other, or at least that was the way in prehistory. And, of course, now most everyone just speaks English. But mm-hmm. they are different and the same. There was a lot of actual warfare during the prehistorical ages it is a long distance, what, about 1,200 miles and a lot of islands, and these people were a lot of times at odds with each other. So when Russia discovered America and started coming to America, they subjugated rather than assimilated the Aleut culture, so very little of it was left or is left. Some oral tradition and not a lot of history has been written about the culture before Russian occupation. So when mm-hmm. I heard that otter legend, I heard it a couple of different times of the brother and sister who fell in love and threw themselves in the sea to become the first sea otters. I knew it was something that I wanted to write about, and I wanted to write about the Russian occupation and and what it must have been like that first time to see that Russian ship and to have that come into their lives and to have it not be a positive thing. That's sort of where it came from looking down off the cliffs and seeing the depressions in the ground where the old villages were. You could see where their houses were if you were up on the hillside. And I just thought, wow, it'd be nice if I could just walk down there and walk into a village. So I did that.
The Aleut people that you refer to, one of the primary character is Kate Browning. And this is a young woman who has a tremendous amount of education. She is a researcher, and she's in her early 30s, and she's coming back to the islands. And when I say coming back, she actually, in the story, was born in the Aleutian tribal environment. But this was long after the Russian occupation. And then she was adopted out. That's the character portrayal of Kate. And this is a very, very bright woman. But she has an interesting patterning because she actually thinks she might be going insane because she's having experiences and she cannot explain them. So this is where you bring in an aspect of the paranormal, which I have known natives. In fact, I had a client one day that came to me that was thinking she was going insane because of the experiences she was having. And I think that so frequently people do not realize that among many of these cultures that the paranormal was very common for them. They would talk about it. The elders would sit around and discuss things. But this character, Kate Browning, is living, quote-unquote, in the white man's world. So how do you tell someone that you're having these experiences? So she's coming back to the Aleutians. And where did you get the character Kate? Was it a part of yourself? Was it a part of some people that you met? Or did she actually, as a character, build herself through you to become the woman that you portray on these pages in The Time of the Otter?
Oh, I imagine that she is just a combination of the things I've read and the things I've seen in the Aleutians. Mostly, it's about the dislocation. I wanted Kate, and the whole premise of that book to me is finding out where you belong. And she had always felt displaced. And throughout history, the history of the Aleutians, the Aleut people have been displaced by Russia, by America, by the Second World War, by whoever would come up here and maybe take advantage, etc., of the people who lived here. And I just wanted a vehicle to show some of those things through the years, through the centuries, how that had happened and how they, and I wanted to show some justice. Mm-hmm. I just wanted somehow for something about the Aleut culture to have justice. So mm-hmm. that and the sea otters are one of my favorite animals up here and mammals, and they were the method that I used to bring that out in story form.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and oh, it's incredible. The legend about the otter, number one, is a very real thing because that is part of the cultural, the oral tradition that has survived. But you have a character, Vince, who is the primary male character in this book. And, of course, he is an Aleut himself, and he's involved with being the police officer of the island, if you will. Now, you don't have a heck of a lot of people on this island that Kate has landed upon. But it's as if something inside of her, and you portray it so well, is calling to her. It's time for her to go home. And she's having all of these unique experiences, and she can't explain them. And one of the things that you bring out in the book, in the story portrayal, is how the village is dry. That Vince, as the officer of the law, the purveyor of justice, keeps a very, very strict ruling regarding bringing any alcohol, any drug substances in, because there's been such a major problem with alcoholism. The native people, genetically, just cannot handle it. It creates major problems, and it brings up an issue that the Native Americans have to deal with frequently, and that is that the youth are still carrying that same genetic marker, and so they just cannot handle alcohol, and drugs just have been so destructive to them. And you bring this out very, very clearly. Is this something that is still a major challenge, like on the island where you are?
Yes, of course, the island that I'm living on now is not dry. However, several of the outlying villages are. Yes, it is a big problem. Alcoholism is a big problem among the Aleut people. And another thing that is a big problem is that, like you said, they are such a small population that they don't have schools, and the kids get shipped off to other places and learn how to do things that, the villagers probably would rather not have them know how to do, which is how to make moonshine out of various food substances. Mm-hmm. And that can just be a very big problem.
Oh, yes, it is. It's a very big problem. One of the factors that I loved about your book is that you talk about the environment there. And I have to tell you, I had a very dear friend who actually served in the Second World War. And I remember Herbie talking about how bleak the Aleutians were because we were battling the Japanese, and the Japanese had come in to the Aleutian Islands. This was going to be their gateway, if they had had their way, to getting into areas of the United States during the Second World War. And when he was there, he talked about how bleak it was. But in your book, Time of the Otter, you bring out all this information about the various forms of life that live there, sea life, not just the otter, but also something called ribbon seaweed and elephant kelp. And the Aleutian bumblebee? I didn't know that you had bumblebees up in the Aleutians. I just thought it was too harsh an environment. But there's this particular species for bumblebee. You bring out so many of these wonderful facts about various components that people used for healing, like burnet and yarrow. Who knew? I mean, I have no idea that all of these wonderful, wonderful elements actually are thriving in this environment. I thought it would have been like a barren wasteland, almost like Antarctica.
Actually, the Aleutian Islands are considered maritime temperate, and we have a mean temperature average of about 40 degrees. It rarely ever gets to zero. I don't know if I've ever had it get to zero here in the 30 odd years I've lived here. Of course, it's really hostile because it's stormy, and so of course the wind chill gets very, very, the temperature gets very, very low. However, we don't have permafrost, so in the summer, these islands look like the tropics. I mean, the grass is waist high, there are flowers everywhere, and we do have a big bumblebee and lots of bird life. It is really a utopia for a lot of the, and it is beautiful in the wintertime too. It's just not conducive to people who like warm weather or like, you know, a comfortable temperature. It can be very, very challenging and dangerous. And the water's dangerous and the cliffs are dangerous. But for those who like to brave challenges, it's a beautiful place to live.
Well, you definitely have done that. And you talk about that in your book. You talk about caverns. In fact, Kate is a scientist, the main character. She is searching for things, and she absolutely has a passion for otters. And there are these two vile human beings that end up killing an otter, and she knows who they are, and she finds out what they've done, and it just devastates her. And it becomes aware, though, in this one particular section. It's right at the beginning of the book where she is in her wetsuit, she's gone underwater, and a man dies in her arms. And it's a vision. It's not make-believe. She knows this person. And this is, again, where the paranormal comes in. And you fold this into your story through various levels, and a person is able to go through these experiences with your character, Kate. And Vince, who is an Aleut, he understands something's going on with her. He finds himself falling in love with her, but then he remembers certain stories told by the elders about the otter and about so many other things, and he realizes that Kate, in certain experiences that you share in this book, Time of the Otter, she is in a trance, and she's actually being occupied by a spirit from the past. And it is an incredible thing that you bring through here. And this in the native culture, they will speak of these things. They will talk about these things. And it's just wonderful the way you present this. I mean, it keeps and captivates the attention because you want to find out what's going on with Kate. She can't explain this to anyone. In fact, she brings in a friend of hers that's from New York that's a psychiatrist, which I thought was a hoot.
Yes, I did bring in her psychiatrist friend just to try to put some sanity and have a sounding board for her to get this information down on the page. And also because Kate had that friend, who had always helped her as a child. They were childhood friends, and so it made it possible to bring out the passion that Kate felt about, in essence, bullying, and how she felt about even as a child that this sense of injustice of things that had happened 300 years earlier to her ancestors was strong in her veins even as a child, and even alienated completely from her culture and her people.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I like to call it, a genetic memory that many times is passed along. But you even dip into reincarnation. You dip into what I call reality, alternate reality time folds. And the reason I describe it that way is because she's awake when she's having these experiences. She's living them. She is seeing back in a page or time frame of centuries past. And that's part of her journey, is to be able to get justice for what was done hundreds of years before. And I thought how you brought in those particular aspects was very important. And then, of course, Vincent is witnessing this along with some other people, and then there is an elderly woman, which is Vincent's mother, who is able to understand what's going on, and she's very supportive of Kate when she has a chance to meet her. But she also knows that this is a journey she's got to go through because something has to be finished. And in the story, Vince is brought into this, and he is part of the story. He's part of the completion and the execution of justice. And I found that this was a fascinating concept to be able to bring forth. In your living on the Aleutian Island, have you had the opportunity to talk to many elders? Did you get some of this essence from having shared conversation with some of the people that have this native background?
Yes, I have. I have some very good friends that are native elders. Of course, as time goes on, you know those friends are already gone. But we would have sometimes. I remember one particular time, an evening when my husband and I had traveled the 80 miles to the village, and they had an old timer story night, and many stories were told that night, and some of those did influence the way that I wrote that book, because they were actual stories told by actual Aleut elders, and besides being very interesting, lots of them humorous, they were exact as those people were told them. Stories, memories from the past.
The information about the subconscious, the information about how the subconscious can create because of being frightened, because of fears of different types. You can actually get physiological conditions, and Kate suffers with asthma big time because the fear just causes her not to be able to breathe. And that is part of the, you fooled in so much of this so nicely that when someone's reading the story, they go into the time frame that you're writing about and they can experience this. And of course, I'm not going to give away the ending on this, but I will say that justice is served. But there was a term that you used. It was a Kagadaga, K-A-D-G-A-D-A-G-A. It was a stone, Kagadaga. Tell us what that is.
It's a little statue, a little deity that, as far as archaeological studies have been done, was used as a talisman. It is carved, usually very roughly, just gouged out eyes and maybe an incised line across to make a neck area where it could be tied, like in a doorway. And it was just a talisman of good luck. Good was one of their. One not particularly a god maybe, but something that they used as a way to, I don't know, worship. I don't know whether I want to say superstition, but that little god, for want of a better word, was hung in doorways.
So many aspects of a culture, an Aleut culture, and so much more is in this wonderful book, Time of the Otter. If you enjoy history, if you enjoy being taken into a world, into an environment that you've never experienced, which I would say most people just haven't a clue about the Aleutian Islands and their history, but it gives understanding of how many times things will be passed along and we can carry them within ourselves and not realizing that we have got a memory, a genetic memory, that somehow or another we need to free ourselves from, and that's what Kate goes through, Vince, who ends up being the love of her life, and so much more is in this book. It's not just a romance. It is a story about an aspect of culture, of life, and I think, Cora, you've done just an incredible job with bringing in Russian history, what the natives had to go through, so many aspects about the Aleutian Islands that I don't think any of us really would have a clue about if it wasn't for your taking the time to write this beautiful story. And, of course, anyone can go to your website, coraholmes.com, C-O-R-A-H-O-L-M-E-S, and find out about your other writings as well. Time of the Otter, beautiful cover, but more than that, the story inside will really create a lot of, well, maybe curiosity, a thought about time folds, the paranormal, and a love story. It's a good read. Cora Holmes, thank you very much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. If you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, that's 888-627-6008. And I just wanted to make a comment because of interviewing Cora. There were pauses there in our interview because there was a time delay. She's up in the Aleutians, and so often with phone lines, we have that little bit of space where if we talk, we're going to, like you would normally, you're going to overlap with the other person. So she paused just enough so that we would be able to get her. So if you wondered why the pauses were in there, that's why. That sometimes, depending on where you call the phone lines, there will be that little bit of a time delay. Again, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Yvonne Wakefield. Her book is titled Suitcase Filled with Nails. This is a woman that taught for 5 years in an environment that I don't know that very many people would have tolerance for, but she did it. And we're going to find out where that was and what she did and what she learned and what she brought back with her when she came back to the United States. So that is going to be for tomorrow. Also, we're going to be giving information out to you. Show information will be posted shortly about our guests coming up for next month. My goodness, just seems like it's moving along so fast. If you're like me, you're looking at this year of 2012 and you're going, where did it go? My goodness, it's just whipped along with a tremendous speed. Well, just know that I think when you're productive and busy, it just seems to whip up a little bit faster. But I hear that comment even from younger people that say, I can't believe it's gone by so fast. It's just zipping right there. And that's absolutely true. And I'm sorry, we're still going to be here after the 21st of December. Oh, I have to share something with you. I have a neighbor, and this was during the summer. She decided she wanted to have a party on the 21st, and what we're going to do, we were chatting, and I said, well, since it's supposed to be the end of the world, why don't we have a potluck and everybody bring their favorite food? So I'm going to bring fried chicken and chocolate cake. I figured, hey, if it's the last day, why don't go out eating what you really, really love? And she laughed. She said, that's a great idea. So all of us that are going to be going for the celebration on the 21st, we're all going to bring our favorite foods, and we're going to have what we want. Of course, we may not be happy with the scales the next day, but we can always run around the block or run 5 miles and work it all off. But anyway, we're still going to be here, especially here at VBS Radio, so don't think the show's going to disappear. It's not. I wanted to share something with you. There was an octogenarian, a Spanish lady, who saw how a church in her nearby area, that it was a fresco that had deteriorated. Now, this was a 19th century fresco that was of Christ. So she decided she was going to take things into her own hands and fix it. Well, by the time she got through, she really made a mess, and her intentions were good, but she was quickly advised that this was not something she should have done, and she confessed to the local authorities that she was the one that had put her wonderful artistic, if you can call them wonderful, because what a blooming mess she made. So they have to go in and remove all the stuff that she put on there. Her heart was in the right place. It's just that she didn't have the talent to do what she needed to do. We've got a caller on the line, and you too can call in and chat with me at 888-627-6008. Caller, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
I'm calling from Detroit. Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Detroit, Michigan.
I'm from Detroit.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, and my name is Laura.
Okay. Laura, I'll give you some information, and then afterwards you're welcome to ask a question about anything you like. First thing, Laura,
okay,
that's coming into my mind, the very first thing, is that typically you're pretty well organized, but in this year of 2012, many times you've been feeling like you've been flopping around like a fish out of water, and you're just saying to yourself, what's the matter with me? Why can't I seemingly pull things together the way I want to? I want you to stop beating yourself up because you've had a lot of external situations going on. You also have found yourself mentally questioning a lot of things. And when we're in a cycle like that, where we're looking at our lives, we're making evaluations, things are changing with the people around us, we're challenging, we are saying, do I need this anymore? What should I do? Do I really know what I want? I mean, all kinds of questions. There's a myriad that we can ask ourselves. It is not surprising to me that you're feeling like you're not in control, and I want you to be okay with that, because you're not. There are some things you are in control of, but there's a number of things you have absolutely no control over at all. So what I would like for you to do, because we don't have that much longer before we're going to be in the new year, 2013. I want you to put yourself in a place of isolation. When I say that, maybe isolation for you would be sitting in like a Starbucks and having a pad of paper with you and a pen. And you just need to be by yourself. Maybe it's going to the library, could be sitting in your bathroom at home with the door locked. It's up to you. But I want you to really have a time of meditation, and I want you to be quiet. This is for you. And I want you to really look at the fact that your life is going through a shift that is going to be very intense. It's been pretty intense this year, and it's going to be pretty intense next year. But I want you to know that through this shift, You are going to be asking a lot of questions, but you're not lost. You are exploring, and you need to be mindful of your exploration because it's going to have an effect on you mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. You are not going backwards. You actually are in the beginning process of disengaging from those components, associations, belief systems, whatever, that no longer are appropriate for you. You're rewriting your script. That's the way I should put it. So you need to be mindful about what it is that you want. And that's not being out of order. You really need to think it through. For example, if you felt you really wanted to go back to school, I'll just use that as a simple example, then look at what you need to focus on. Do you need to take a vocational aptitude test to find out your strengths? Do you need to look at planning maybe for 2 years, 5 years, 6 years, whatever it might entail for you to get the education that gives you the credential or the credibility that you yearn for, or the simple education that you yearn for? I think you're breaking through a very, very thick shell that's been around you because you felt like you needed to be in this cocoon. So you are in the process of breaking out of the cocoon, just like a butterfly, but it takes time. And that's why the questioning is so important. So I don't want you to be so hard on yourself. And I want you to remember, stop rescuing people, because that is part of the confusion here. You're a very giving person. Stop the rescuing. Do what you need to do
stop
for yourself.
What? I'm sorry. Stop what?
Stop
Did
the
you rescuing.
Stop rescuing? Yes, stop rescuing people, because you need to pay attention to what your needs are, so that you can have clarity. So that you can have clarity. And then you're going to be able to really move forward fast. So between now and, I'd say, the 15th of March of 2015, you've got a lot of growth you're going through, a lot of self-examination, a lot of questioning. I want you to be present with the journey. I don't want you to feel like you got a big battle in front of you, because you don't, dear. You are growing. You're expanding yourself, and I want you to invest in yourself, because the good you're going to be able to share with other people is just incredible. What question would you like to ask me, Laura?
Whether or not it's all scripted ahead of time, or at least in part, we create our own reality by our decisions, be they good or bad or well-informed or not. You know, I made a lot of decisions for somebody, and it did go haywire.
Well, if they put it into your hands and you accepted the responsibility, you do not know all of the facts. This is the time for you to say, obviously, I made an error, and you wanted me to do this, and I accepted the responsibility, and I'm going to relinquish it back to you. This, you need to take charge of your own space. So I think that the decisions that were made, many of the decisions were made without being totally aware of all the extenuating circumstances. So this is part of your growth patterning. You did not know a lot of the things that were going on behind the scenes. And because you have a patterning of wanting to take care of and rescue people, you want to insulate them. And this comes from a memory of past lives. It's like, I've got to do this because I have to make up for something that I didn't do. Well, that's not the case in this life experience. You don't have to do that. But this is what you needed to go through so that you would wake up to the reality that there is a change that you can implement in your own space that will enable you to assist and empower other people, but not take on their responsibilities. In other words, making them aware of things so that they become responsible for their own lives.
Yeah, assuming they can, assuming they're not so disabled. But I think as a human calling to want or longing to want to ease suffering if it's right in front of your eyes, you know?
No, not necessarily. That is not true. There are many, many people that live in this world that could care less. I understand where you're coming from. But there is another level of thinking that you have not yet become aware of. And yes, people are disabled. And there are some people that they need the assistance of others. But I think that part of what may be necessary for you is to be able to understand how to look at different components. You are a protector. There are times when you have to back away from that. There are times that you need to make it okay that you cannot fix everything. So it's a different level of thinking. It doesn't mean your feelings are wrong and that your caring is wrong. It's just knowing how to work with it differently.
Right.
And that is what is evolving. That is what is evolving with you because you cannot control everything.
Right. Especially if you're in the darkness. I mean, not control, but create the outcome, co-create the outcome. Especially if you just don't have enough information. Well, thank you so much. Just everything you said is spot on with me, the way I am. I'm not trying to control anything. I'm born into a family with just, I think, way above average problems.
Well, Laura, remember.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm so delighted you called in, and you have a marvelous holiday season.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for just a minute. If you want to chat with me, 888-627-6008 is the number to call into. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you. We offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. I've got to share something that I came across this morning when I was getting ready for the show that I thought was so cute. Of course, we know the holidays are here, and all of us are going to have an opportunity to have all kinds of goodies. Well, Jarrett Sylvester, his wife, last Christmas, her name is Laura. Laura was counting her calories. Oh, she was being so good. She didn't want to gain any holiday pounds. So she asked her husband to hide her favorite snacks in a cupboard too high for her to reach, even with a chair. Now, he comes home from work one evening, and he sees a nearly empty bag of a high-calorie food product sitting on the counter. Now, he had hidden these. He had put them in a cupboard she couldn't reach. So we asked her, he said, how'd you get these down? He was totally shocked. Well, she had been caught. And she looked at him, and he said she was very sheepish about the whole thing. She said, with a little eggnog. Oh, my goodness. Eggnog. Woohoo! Well, that'll do wonderful things for the hips. Google staffers, well, they are enjoying something. Maybe not they're enjoying, but they are going to, their families are going to enjoy some benefits. This is an article that I came across, and it came from the Week magazine. Google employees, when they die, They get perks. Sounds a little strange. Well, there is a policy that was put in place in 2011 that a surviving spouse or a domestic partner of a deceased Google employee will receive 50% of the employee's salary every year for 10 years. In addition, the employee's children will receive $1,000 every month until they turn 19 or until the age of 23 if they're full-time students. That's $12,000 a year. Holy Moses, that's a lot of money. There's no 10-year requirement for the benefits, so most of the company's 34,000 employees qualify. Laszlo Bock, the Google's chief people officer, says the new policy that Google has implemented is death benefits. Yes. I just thought I'd pass that along. It didn't take a union to do this either. Isn't that amazing? It's unheard of. But that's what they did. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Do you know of anyone that suffers with dizziness? Now, I have had experiences with this, and it is not fun. I have ended up with vertigo a few times in my life. Thank God it's not very often. But boy, when it hits, it can be so debilitating. It is incredible, and it can come out of the blue. Many times people are diagnosed with Meniere's disease, but they actually don't know what causes a lot of it. They'll put that tag on it, but it may not be Meniere's at all. And Meniere's is relating to the inner ear. Well, the inner ear, you can have vertigo affect you. Now, no drug on the planet can treat it or cure it. But they said they have discovered that there is a solution. They call it a low-tech solution. It's a vestibular rehabilitation or balance retraining, which involves doing movements such as nodding your head up and down or turning it to the right or the left. And this works with the brain and your inner ear as well. They found when they did this, the patients who got a booklet with such exercises had less dizziness within weeks. Now, the reason this occurs is that when you're doing these moves, they teach your brain how to adapt to movement, which diminishes the dizziness symptoms. Now, you can go and get a booklet about this. And it comes from the UK. You can go to meniers.org.uk. That's meniers.org.uk. Check it out. And I can tell you for a fact that's true. And if you know of anyone, let's say, that is going to be on a flight, so many people are traveling, and if you're going to be flying, I'll pass along a tip that was given to me by a pharmacist up in Alaska. This was a few years ago when I had a bout with dizziness that literally forced me to lay down on the floor because I was so incredibly dizzy. Well, he said, if you take Sudafed before a flight, what it will help do, especially if you're getting dizzy and maybe you've got a cold, and I had had a cold at the time, well, it apparently affected my inner ear. And he said, if you take Sudafed before you go on the plane where your sinuses are drained or dried, then that will enable you to do the flight without having severe vertigo. Because he said, once vertigo is affecting you, it takes a while for the brain to regulate itself. So if you know of anyone that's going through this, remember, have them close their eyes and have them move their head gently up and down, side to side. And it will level out the signals that are going to the brain. And also, if you're going to be taking a flight and you have this vertigo hitting you, Sudafed, especially if you've got a cold, if you've got something with the inner ear. This was passed along to me by a pharmacist. Also, I heard this from a nurse that was experiencing things like this and said, this is what I want you to know. Keep it in your cabinet, in your medicine cabinet. Keep it handy when you're traveling, because if you've had this once, it can occur again. And that is just a safety mechanism for you. So I pass that along because it helped me tremendously. But it's not fun when you're experiencing that. Tomorrow we are going to be talking with Yvonne Wakefield, Suitcase Filled with Nails. We're going to be talking about a woman's dedicated teaching experience in a country on the other side of the planet that really was quite an experience on so many levels. We'll be talking with Yvonne about her suitcase filled with nails, and there's a reason why she has used that title. Donna Sebo here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Always be willing to put yourself into this wonderful experience of life, reaching for the finest and the best. Do you know it all? Heavens no. But part of your journey is learning how to expand your world and your life in a wonderful way. And that comes about by interacting with people, reading, being a part of life, not isolating from it. This is important. Your mind belongs to you. Don't ever turn it over to anyone else. God bless. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Look forward to having you join me. We always have a good time. Welcome back tomorrow. Donna here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.